And welcome to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
Jasmine Nothing.
That's me.
And our guest host this week, Allie.
J. Ward.
That's me.
That's her. I thought I was going to do that for the topic, but I did that for a name. I was like, I forgot to ask before. Welcome to The Smoke Break. For entertainment purposes only, hopefully we've done that. And we work in the field of mental health, but don't claim to be professionals in this space. Our intent is to have conversations around lived experience. And as a result, we'll not always agree with everything our guests say, but we do intend to hold space for open conversations and learning from one another. Thank you so much for joining us, Ali J. Ward.
I did it.
I found y'all.
You did. You did. We're kind of tucked away. So a topic that you wanted to talk with us a little bit about is imposter syndrome. I'm kind of curious, like what were your initial thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's something I've battled most of my life in some capacity as a trans person.
Sure.
I do have a joke on stage that I was born with it because my birthday is April 1st. And so,
ouch.
Yeah. Ouch. Like when you're a kid, everyone's like, you get to celebrate your birthdays, and then yours comes around, and everyone's like, sure.
Like a story.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah. But no, I think it's something that I have always sort of lived with. I've never really felt like I fit in as a closeted trans woman a child, and having to do like boy activities, sports especially.
I like
doing this, but I still don't feel like I'm part of this group of people.
Yeah.
And trying to find communities in that way. And then like even as during transition, the feelings of like, oh gosh, I don't even meet the feminine standards or these kind of things. And it's just like, gosh, I don't even know.
They're stupid standards anyway.
Where I fit in and all this kind of stuff. So I feel it's something that I've always sort of like lived with and had to kind of combat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I appreciate you sharing your perspective on both sides of that, of like before transitioning, you're just like, I don't feel like this.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's like, I feel more like this, but I don't feel like I'm matching it in a way that like feels comfortable.
Yeah, or just like with whatever societal expectations, external expectations are put on you to meet. And I feel like the way that you do have to just combat it is be authentically yourself at this point. Like, there is no real standard or a thing that you have to meet, and just like define it yourself, I guess.
Yeah. I like that. Well, and I like that you say that there's not really like, I don't know, like the standard's almost made up, you know, it's almost like the time's a fucking construct thing where it's just like, you know what, like any standard was created by people who like, I don't necessarily even want to impress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Totally. So much of it, I think, is just money. Like so many of the standards that exist are just to make money off of you anyways.
Yeah.
Like you'd be a better this if you had those clothes or that body or like that hair.
Makeup? That shit is expensive. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
I just bought like a little eyebrow pen. They're like $25. I was like, this is more than an art set.
Yeah, no doubt.
This is insane. I was like looking at some like cover up and stuff, and they're like, cool, I just need $80. I was like, just to like cover up my cheeks? That's so expensive.
Just want a little coverage.
Exactly. But yeah, I think imposter syndrome is almost sold to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you like connect with this idea?
I don't know. I mean, I think like pretty much anytime there's something I really want to do that I'm scared I'm not good enough for, which is like a lot of the time. I've had a thing happen recently where like I've become better at things that I was scared to try, and then and then accepting that I'm okay at them has been hard. Especially like with like becoming a therapist, that one was really scary for me.
Yeah,
I was like, do I have this? Like, am I like people are going to look to me for like a, you know? Obviously, I don't want to be an authority figure. That's not part of my philosophy.
And it's so much power over other people.
Yeah, people do see you that way, and so like really trying to, well, one, like take that seriously and like be thoughtful about it. But I mean, I also try to like deconstruct that as much as I can with clients. Like, I'm not in charge. I just went to school for some stuff. You probably know lots of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah,
you definitely know yourself better than me. But yeah, just
I like that.
But I think. Definitely just like trying something new or trying something that you see other people that are good at that you admire and then being like, do I belong here? Like I do that a lot.
Yeah.
It's frustrating when people will tell you you belong there and then you still feel like you don't belong there. That one's hard for me.
And that's like,
nope, I hate this. We're stopping the episode. I didn't like that. I'm having, okay.
I'm like, stop trying to prove that I'm wrong about how I feel about myself. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's like mostly it, right? It's you convincing yourself that you're not, you know, a part of whatever it is that you're putting yourself into. And it's not most of the time, it is these people that you assume are external factors have no
Yeah.
They don't care.
They don't care as much as I care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, and something I like that you said was like, you're the expert of your, you know, kind of like you're the expert of your own life. I've heard Jasmine say it a couple times. And I really do like identify with that, because it's like, we need to come from a perspective of like, we're living our lives. We've been here for every part of it. Mm-hmm. So like the understanding that like you are the closest to you, but that also means that like you're the closest to you and you can't really see yourself accurately sometimes. Cause like sometimes I have to look through the eyes of other people, because
your perception's not so good on you
sometimes. I get it wrong sometimes. I get it wrong sometimes. I appreciate that. So like, what helps you with combating like imposter syndrome? Like, do you have any like kind of go-tos of like
I think for me it's been a lot of just finding people that I want to surround myself with, and then like using their feedback and their like if they're going to say something positive, like I have to accept that. Like nobody goes out of their way to like say, you know, I don't know. It doesn't feel like, at least.
Yeah.
So like using what people have to say about me, how people perceive me, is kind of like a nice boost. Like I can't stop fighting this.
Well, and
capacity.
It sounds like you're like just allowing people to be right about you, you know, allowing them to be right and just say like, hey, this person says that I'm awesome. Maybe I am.
Because I have a terrible habit of like, I can do that. I will assume that people's opinions about me are right if they're bad. But as soon as somebody says something nice, right? I'm like, well, not that one. Yeah. Which doesn't make any sense. Because like, if you said something nice about me, I'd be like, nah. But I like trust your opinion way more than a lot of other opinions.
Yes.
But then I trust the opinions of people who are full of shit all the time. And I would not like to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to switch it up either.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like something that like somebody had said to me, I was just like, oh my God, this person doesn't like me. And they're like, do you even like that person? And I was like, oh no, what have I done? Why do I like, but it's just like, I think that wanting to be liked, wanting to be a part of something can have you like giving away parts of yourself that you may not have necessarily wanted to, but like it was to be a part, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I do is just, I really try not to be hard on myself or apply shame to things that I enjoy or like things that are a part of like who I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so like
such thing as guilty pleasures.
Right.
Just pleasures.
Yeah, bars. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Like I used to just be like, from like, there was a point in time where like, it was time to grow up and stop watching pro wrestling. And so I did. And I was like, okay, that's not cool anymore. So I'm just going to stop. And then like, I think a lot of people probably relate to this, but I think the pandemic added a ton of perspective on just like,
sure.
You know, how much time we have left and like, we are forced to go inside and actually like, do things that we like, you know, maybe love ourselves if you can get that far. That's when I found wrestling again. You know what? I love it. And that's part of me, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm taking that back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is imposter syndrome shut up for you, Zane?
Yeah. You're off the hook.
Yes.
But that's why I asked the questions. How's imposter syndrome show up for me? I would say like oftentimes it's me not having an accurate representation of myself. Like I almost have to listen to other people, because it's like, if I look at myself through my own eyes, I've been doing that for the last 33 years, just celebrated a birthday. Thank you. But yeah, like the last 33 years, I've had this perception. We build these stories up, you know, we have beliefs about ourselves. So like checking in with people whose opinions I do care about, and being able to like absorb the positive things that they're saying really does help me not tell myself the same story.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. One thing is like finding people you can rely on and just be like, hey, I'm feeling this. What's your perception of this situation? Or,
you
know, I tend to spiral and then really like go hard on myself. Yep. Yeah,
absolutely,
right.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, it's like it is really nice to have people you can talk to and be like, hey, this is what I'm feeling. Does this sound right? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's almost like a kind of like reality testing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, just being like, I think that I'm the worst person that's ever lived over, you know, whatever amount of time. Please tell me that I'm not, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it's just like, but it's almost like reassure me that like the story I'm telling myself isn't true.
Yeah.
Not like tell me I'm fucking awesome, because that's never been the case.
Too far.
Yeah.
I like the idea of like really managing like who you're getting that input from, like as a way to, as a strategy to combat it's imposter syndrome, like you were saying, like having the like really, like you were saying, like, do I really care about these people's opinions? Did you say that or did Zane say that? Anyway,
I think
technically I said it, but it was the Zane that told me it in the first place of like, why are you caring about these other people's opinions? And I was like, damn.
But I think that is a really important tool because like to a certain extent, we all have imposter syndrome unless you're one of those weirdos who has like really high self-esteem. And so I think like it is really important to cultivate like a group of people around you that you do respect their opinions and you see them acting in a way that you would like to imagine you, seeing yourself, you know, so then when they do give you feedback, you can be sure like, oh, I can trust this feedback from this person. And then you also can disregard feedback from people who you don't like the way they move or you don't, you know, you don't feel like they're someone who you need to care what they think about you, you know, like.
Yeah.
There was a big fancy meeting at work one time with a bunch of directors and I was supposed to come up with a check-in question and I did ask like about people's experience with imposter syndrome and it was like everybody were like absolutely I do except for like two and that and it tracked perfectly.
Yeah,
and of course you two.
Yeah,
well,
of course you two are the people that don't experience that. Okay,
I feel like there's a healthy amount of imposter syndrome.
I want to say something that this is and not to be like poo poo on people with high self esteem because I would love to have high self esteem would be great. But
can we just balance it out a little?
Well, yeah. But something I found and this could be wrong because it was like 20 years ago in like the first psychology class I ever took. But they told us that people and I'm trying to write a joke about this right now. Actually, people with high self esteem have a more inaccurate self-perception than people with low self-esteem. And so the joke is like, I knew I was right. You know, like, oh, you feel good about yourself? Well, you're wrong. So
take that.
Yeah.
But so, I feel like a certain amount of imposter syndrome is almost important, you know, because it's just like, if you, I don't know, it's almost like the accurate representation of yourself, you know, like if you see that there's room that you need to grow, you know, like that is improvement, you know? And even if you see that there's room to grow when like, you might already be doing great. Like what's wrong with getting a little bit better? You know, like I think the people who don't have imposter syndrome, I used to know this comedian that I started off with who would go by, he would refer to himself in the third person. And that was like, you know, and he
always, or just
yeah, always, oh, okay. Always.
I don't know if that's forgivable.
Yeah.
That's,
it's not
an uncomfortable trait.
but the thing is he would get off stage and he would just be like, oh man, I fucking killed it. And I was like, the energy. Yeah. But like, how do you think that you did great? And I did pretty good and think I did fucking horrible, you know? That's always like such a weird, I don't know, I feel like there's too confident and like there's a middle ground.
There's a lot of those.
Well, Allie does. I'm just kidding.
Allie likes that.
Yeah.
Let's all do it for the rest of the show.
I like I do like what you said about like your own reality and perception of that too. I think that's fair. And also I think like just having a sort of a self identification as well helps a lot. Because one thing that always really made it hard for me during early parts of my transition was my voice. Like it felt really deep and didn't feel feminine at all. And I feel like it has evolved over time on its own.
Sure.
But I haven't done voice training lessons. I don't want to. And I feel like I identify as a woman. So therefore my voice is a woman's voice, you know?
Right,
and it's like, it's not.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's no like right way of having like a voice in general. So
I like that.
Yeah. So like if you can like, if you can self-identify like what makes, you know, and you feel strong in that, like that helps combat it a little bit too.
I like that you said that because I guess I had like a little bit of like similar like gender stuff like on my end where it's just like I don't like my voice either because I'm like this isn't like a masculine fucking rah, 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 you gotta sound like it's not that it's but like I felt like when once I like I was identifying as like non-binary, it was like there wasn't this requirement of like it needs to sound like this. It was just like it sounds like Zane. Zane is Zane, and I sound like Zane.
You're also not super hyper masculine, so of course you don't like. If you had a super voice like that, it'd be weird.
It would be weird if I was sitting like this. I was like, "What's up?" You know, like I don't know if that's what masculine people sound.
Do they do?
That was a nice try, though.
Yeah, thank you. I just attempt. But that's the problem. Is I think the stuff that we build up in our heads and these expectations of what we should be that like once you can you know like affirm an identity and say like this aligns with who I want to be not with an expectation then you know you get a little bit closer
cool. Like
well I appreciate y'all sharing your thoughts and we will be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the smoke break. I'm your host Joel Palzane. Here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
Jasmine Nothing.
Hi.
And Allie J. Ward.
Hello.
So excited to do this next part, which is actually something that you had kind of brought up. So it's kind of around the idea of self-care, but you have a better name for it.
Yeah, I used to run a self-care training at work all the time. And as soon as I would be like, hey, we're going to talk about self-care today, I got a whole bunch of eye rolls. And I think I think people have just gotten really into the idea of that being for like self-care being for like white ladies who want to do yoga and buy really expensive products, and that it's like a multi-billion dollar capitalist thing that we just buy into for money thing. And so we're trying not to do that anymore. And so the idea of self-preservation is more like, how do we really like take care of ourselves? How do we like preserve our dignity and identity and energy in a world that wants to like constantly suck those things away from us? And so, yeah, maybe it is a bubble bath, but it also might be going and doing mutual aid, or it might be going and like bailing your friend out of a crisis, or it might be not answering the phone for 3 days because you just need to speak to nobody for a while. You know, the other silly metaphors of like, you can't pour from an empty cup. Like, what is the thing that is going to like fill you back up so you actually have something to pour from later? Or the other silly one is just, which I have a tattoo from, is just like staying in the boat. Like if you are in a boat and you're in the water and everyone else is in the water around you and you want to save every single person, and you, what happens if you bring them all into the boat with you? Your boat sinks. And now you're all in the water and nobody is going to get out. And so being able to figure out exactly what you have to do to stay in your boat and then pull people in slowly just to... just enough so you can actually like preserve yourself.
I think that self-preservation and just like it's almost like trying to keep yourself alive, you know, like what do I need to do for my brain that's going to allow me to like want to get to tomorrow.
Also how fun that like we've just capitalized a thing that we all needed. Monetize it.
We should do that with food and water.
What a world. What a time to be alive.
But I mean, it also kind of goes into like that idea of like taking something that we do need and being like, well, I mean, if you want the keys to life, you know, like, yeah, you're living, but are you happy?
Yeah.
You fucker. You know? I just got to living, you know?
Let me be happy.
You know, and like going back to like what we talked about, imposter syndrome, like there's ways of combating it, like self-compassion, self, like giving yourself compassion to allow yourself to do these things, you know, is one thing that people struggle with. I struggle with it in a way of, I had a lot of expectations, only child, and I put a lot of my worth on productivity. And so
that's a fun one.
It is, yeah.
I can relate to that
one. And so it is really hard for me to actually schedule time to self-preserve. And I'm often finding that the days that I do have downtime, alone time, are just because of plans that have been canceled, you know, or like for some miraculous reason, this one day on the schedule didn't happen. And then I'm often finding like, well, what could I do with that time? What should I do with that time?
Allie, you and I have so much in common.
Hard.
It is. Well, and I'm curious if you relate with this, because I heard this in reference to artists, but it was basically just like when artists over-identify with their art, when their art isn't received well, like their art isn't bad, then they're bad. And if they're not creating art, then they're like, they lose their worth. So is it like, do you feel like that with like productivity is like, as long as I'm creating, then like I have worth?
No, I don't know if it's necessarily even like art specific. I think like,
well, I mean like the idea of staying busy.
Oh, staying busy. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right.
Like if I'm not, did this.
Like who, like what am I contributing to the world, to how people perceive me,
cleaning, you know, the house, just anything. Just like, well, as long as I can say I did these things, then like I'm okay to be alive.
I'm allowed to have the downtime because I did this thing. Right. There's another one.
I feel like I'm similar in some ways, even though like I am actually very good at just like watching 4 movies in a row on a Saturday and like being fine with that. But like my like self-worth stuff much more comes up around like being helpful. Like I want to be the most useful. So, I mean, people in my life will frequently probably experience that of me just being, but could I do something? What could I do? Can I bring you something? Can I cook for you?
Yeah.
Do you need a place to be? What if and I want them to say, I think people say no to it because they don't want to be a burden, but then that means that I can't be useful to them. So it actually makes me feel worse. And so I want them to say yes to whatever the favor is.
Yeah.
Do you do the thing too, after you've watched those 4 movies, you beat yourself up for doing that. Like, oh, that was 8 hours. What I should
that might be you and me, Allie.
Because sometimes...
I'm like, I can't watch a movie that's 2 hours. I didn't do anything.
Yeah. Are you good about letting yourself
have that? I would
say
that's a big assumption that I wasn't doing anything at the same time.
Oh, right? Yeah.
I feel like I frequently have multiple things happening, but I don't know. Sometimes, like, I haven't taken any time off work in a really long time right now, and I can't feel that directly, and feel like it is probably time. So, but when I get to like this space, then that's when I'm like, I should take a day and do nothing, and like physically, literally do nothing, like just rot on the couch and not.
Yeah.
What about you,
talk
Zoe?
To anyone?
I don't know. I don't know if this is like in general, but I was just thinking about like lately, like how have I been working on this? And I could be like cliche, like, oh, I've been trying to go for walks or whatever. But I think something that I've been working on that could be count as self-preservation is I've been really trying to be more mindful about like how I talk to myself about stuff. And I know this is like kind of its own topic, but I think it is working for self-preservation for me because, I've just tried to be more aware of like if I'm nervous about something. I tried this thing a couple weeks ago for a show where I was like, I'm not nervous, I'm excited. I'm not nervous, I'm excited. And it helped. And I was like, you know, like, this is gonna be fun. I do this because it brings me joy, you know? So just trying to be really conscious of how I talk to myself, because before I know it, I'll be like, this is gonna suck. And I'm like, whoa, Zoe, chill.
Affirmations and self-talk always feel so cheesy. Yeah. And every time I do them, I'm like... really?
But when I listen to how mean I am to myself, if I don't check it, it's like you have to be cheesy to yourself almost.
Yeah.
For sure.
For as mean as we are to ourselves, absolutely. Allie, please.
Oh, yeah. I do like how you brought up that a form of maybe self-preservation is like community care and that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
Because like I usually tie my community like care into like production of shows and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But maybe I am doing a lot of production, but at the same time, like I'm doing it with people that do bring me a lot of joy and also fulfillment and that kind of stuff. So it's cool that you said that, because that can feel like a way of preservation now. It's like, I actually need some community with me in this moment, you know?
Versus... Yeah, which might feel like productivity or grinding.
Yeah.
But you're only doing it for like your loved ones.
Yeah. Or, you know, or bringing like a show that like people who can come to are feeling like they can be in that community too and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a big a place where we can benefit a lot is that community work that also benefits us, because it's like you're contributing something, you're being helpful, right? Mm-hmm. But also like the benefit of like feeling like you've been helpful, like that helps both of you, mm-hmm. you know. So it's like that's why I even like the idea of mutual aid, like fucking charity work, like ugh, gross. I hate words like that, but I think that there is a mutual benefit in, you know, of in even just understanding. Like I feel like oftentimes like it's easy for me to think that everything's really bad for me if I have no context for other people. So it's like sometimes I talk to somebody who's having the fucking worst day ever, and you're like, I was having a not great day, you know? Like it kind of like helps you reframe it and be like, okay, after talking to this person, like was my day the worst day ever, or was it like not the way I planned?
I was actually just talking with somebody the other day about how like because of everything that's going on right now politically, and that, you know, that like mutual aid and community is like such an important thing right now to support ourselves, and like a way to combat hopelessness, I think, too. Mm-hmm. So I think just like, I think those things are really important. Sometimes we don't talk about enough about, and I think for me, like one of my, not like outside of what's happening now, just one of the lowest times in my life, somebody encouraged me to like volunteer, you know what I mean? And it started this whole social work thing, like, you know, and so it was kind of like, wow, sometimes when you can't be there for yourself in the way that you'd like to be, going and being there for someone else is kind of a way of not just, you know, being self-destructive. It's like, okay, well, maybe I can't be kind to myself right now, but I can be kind to someone else. And then I could probably feel better at the end of the day and be a little nicer to myself after that, you know?
Yeah.
So I do really think that's
important. Do you have any go-tos? For like self pro, like where you just like, okay, well, how do I take care of myself? Because it doesn't sound like relaxing is your thing. So maybe it's staying busy with something relaxing.
Yeah, relaxing is hard, right?
How are you filling that cup back up? So you keep pouring.
Yeah. I have over the last couple of years have really worked hard to finding people in my life that I really want to like spend time with. And so like a best friend, like making time to see them and goof off and have fun. I've also, you know, working on dating again and finding meaningful relationships there and those.
Sure.
And so it's been kind of nice having that sort of like We see each other maybe once or twice a week. Yeah. Something to look forward to.
Yes.
I've made time, scheduled this person, and it's not like a work thing. Like I'm enjoying, I'm enjoying my time with this
person. You sure you're not writing jokes with this person? You're just like, listen, gotta double down.
Yeah, right. Like, hey, buddy, like, let's try it. Yeah, I see. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So that's been one way that's been like actually like counteracting the overworking.
Yeah.
Let's see. I mean, I watch... pro wrestling is nice for this because there's so much of it. And it's like, well, you know what? It's Wednesday. It's time for me to watch wrestling and I'm going to do that. And set myself a time for that. And
well, I'm glad that that like helps you refill your cup, you know?
Yeah.
I guess my thing is like my self-preservation. My mom always asks me, she's like, what do you want for Christmas that'll like help you take better care of yourself? Fucking comic books. Books where I'm just like, I just need to read a story where like it all kind of works out, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know. I think like for me, like mentally being able to maintain hope, like you were saying, is like we find it in some of the strangest places. You know, sometimes it's like a good movie where you're like, fuck, I'm going to go be somebody. And then like 2 hours later, you're like, what did I watch? And then you're just the same thing. But I mean, like it can be a bigger thing.
Yeah.
Jasmine, I've just been thinking about like you making music again.
Yes.
So, like that's like really had an impact on you and you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think too is like working on hobbies, you know, working on hobbies. I think that's part of self-preservation because it's like you need to be able to see, you know, and even self-compassion. It's like you need to see yourself shine in different ways. So that way you can reinvigorate that hope for yourself. You know, it's like you watch yourself do something really cool and you're like, I am a cool person. I do cool things and I should keep doing that. So,
Yeah.
What about you? What's your self-compassion, self-preservation hack?
I mean, I do think like show production is a big part of it because it is a lot of the way that I get back with community and stuff. One of the things I was thinking about earlier was just the idea that with like the imposter syndrome stuff was that like I've always been queer and also I've not had a lot of queer friends and whenever I would hang out with queer people they definitely thought I was straight, I think, and because my partner and I look perhaps appeared like straight people to them, and I never wanted to just be like, but no, like really I am. And I feel like in the last like couple of years, I mean, you're part of that, Allie, like as far as just like hanging out with a lot more queer folks. And that has felt really affirming, kind of like cup filling.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. If we're going to keep using my silly metaphor. so that's been really helpful. So like, but that's mostly like outside of the house stuff. And I feel like at home, all I want to do is cook. I never have time for it and energy for it, but I've been trying really hard to get back into it, like cooking and baking and just like quiet, like listening to records or podcasts and like not talking to anybody else because my entire life is talking to people. Like show production stuff is so much talking and my entire job is talking or really, really actively listening, which is maybe more tiring. It'd be cool. It's just nice to do something that is not that as I talk about it further into a microphone right now. But whatever.
Talking about talking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love to cook for people. Like that's really fun for me.
Yeah.
You know,
that's my least favorite thing. No? I feel like that would not, because it's just like now I'm making something and it's bad and we both have to eat it or we both have to agree that it's so bad that we can't eat it and you waited for nothing.
That reminded me of something. I really value friendships and partnerships with people who are honest about their capacity with their cup and all those kind of things. I don't want you to have to feel forced to hang out with me if you're not feeling it, if you're not up for it and those kind of things. And so I think like checking in with yourself and like having that with yourself too of like, I actually am overworking. I do need downtime. I am so sorry, you know, whatever that means to you. But like, I hope folks like at least check in with like yourself too and be better, like have less shame around telling somebody like, I can't do this thing.
Yeah. Well, and something I, you know, and it sounds corny or whatever, but just like the idea of like every time you say no to somebody else, you're saying yes to yourself. And I think that is like so fucking true because it's just like, it's very easy to think that like every yes is like moving you closer to the thing that you want. But like if every yes is just exhausting you further, like, is it, you know? So Well, no, I really appreciate everyone sharing their thoughts on that. And we will be right back with the smoke break, not a commercial break.
Another segment.
Yep. And welcome back to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Palzane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Jasmine Nothing.
Still me.
And Allie J. Ward.
Hello.
All right. So during our last segment, something I want to talk about is, I guess we've talked a little bit in the past about dehumanization, which is almost like the idea of like intentionally not seeing people as people. But I'm trying to like come back around to a place of like, how do we start seeing people as just entire stories?
Yeah, I think just like being able to kind of zoom out and see the whole context of a person and not assuming that somebody is their worst moment or their worst behavior or the most annoying thing they did, or that just because they did something to me means that they're necessarily a bad person or cancelable or whatever. Sure. And then just like everybody has much more like a rich history and context that we are only seeing a snippet of. And even if you know somebody pretty well, you're still only seeing like a slice of that, of what that person has.
Yeah. Definitely.
I think of like the idea that like everybody is deserving of love and respect. Nobody has to earn those things. And I think that's a really important thing that we get wrong a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Within ourselves as well as the way we treat other people, you know?
Sure.
So I think like just really like you can find a space to have that belief for everybody while also, you know, like having boundaries that allows you to feel safe and, you know, in that process, right? So like just because someone's doing something that we don't necessarily want to be around or doesn't feel safe for us doesn't mean that we have to dehumanize them. We can just, you know, we can be like, okay, like this person deserves to exist in whatever way they exist. And like,
but I don't have to be in the same
room as them. I'm going to exist over here, but they're allowed to exist. Yeah.
And nobody's more valuable than anybody else. I think that's a really important part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a hierarchy. We deconstruct the hierarchy.
Yeah, for sure. What about you? What are your thoughts on this one?
You know, it's an interesting topic for you to bring up. I it's not one I've thought a ton about, but it sure is easy to do in this era of internet and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the dehumanizing part.
Yeah, right. And so it is hard, I think, for a lot of folks to take a step back from one like the internet and social media and like where most of us like spend our time and live and that kind of thing, right?
Too much.
And because at the end of the day, like these are not a actual reality.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In its own sense too. I like what you said a lot about just like people with stories and that kind of thing.
We were
in between the breaks. I was like trying to remember this book I read. And it was during the Tea Party movement actually. But this person interviewed people who like lived in, basically Louisiana it was called Strangers in Their Own Land, but they voted against their own sort of, safety and
their best interests,
their best interests. And so, you know, they're voting for a party that is actively polluting their land and making it unsafe to live in, you know, creating policies that are creating less jobs and those kind of things. But people still believe they have to vote for this because of the dehumanization of maybe the opposite party
there's a lot of
reasons.
I don't want to vote for you, but I definitely don't want to vote for them.
And I think like it was an interesting read because it's just like having compassion for people who are making those choices because they have only lived in these areas and grown up in these areas where, and then all they're taught is this lifestyle, you know? And so, I try to like take a step back and just like view like there's a lot of external factors as to why this person maybe has to feel this way. Or,
yeah.
I mean, it's the way we shit on the South.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely. Right. Yeah. Like, and as a whole, the South, that's like
region.
From Texas all the way to Florida up, you know? Yeah. So, you're not wrong there too. And so, and there are like clearly plenty of people who don't feel that way in the South too, but there's a lot of external social and cultural, religious factors that make a person who they are. And so,
I like that you kind of read that because it almost sounds like you were reading about the perspective of people who didn't share a perspective to understand why they landed there. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is the most humanizing thing that we can do, because it's like whether it's on the left or the right, like we kind of hit this point where it's like we stop seeing people as people, right? Mm-hmm. People are people and there's rules for people, but the second you don't see somebody as a person, you can treat them however, right? So it's like I would never punch a person, right? I would never punch a person. Why would I punch a person?
Unless
a Nazi,
I punch the shit out of a Nazi. You know what I mean? So those rules change. A Nazi's not a person, therefore this. And it's like, I feel like on the right, very similarly, they say, I would never punch a person, but these people aren't people, so I can treat them like this. And so I think where we kind of have to get to is like, because this thing, I'm watching this breakdown happen, right? Because like, a lot of people, like, let's say on the right, are just like, hey, just saying rude fucking shit. And then on the other side, the left is like, fuck you, go kill yourself, you're awful, and just saying all this other stuff back. And it's just like, neither, you didn't see them as a human, which is why you did this, and you stopped seeing them as a human, which is why you reacted like this. And I think, like, the most, we're not going to get anywhere if we just keep finding a way to say, I'm not like you, you're not like me, so you're bad. But that's difficult, you know?
I'm just thinking about, like, around like gay marriage time. Mm-hmm. They were trying to do all these campaigns around it to convince people to vote for it, and it wasn't working at all. But then they started having gay people just go door to door and knock and be like, hi, me, I am the gay person that would like to get married to this other person, and I really love them. And then all of a sudden it was real. It was real people doing it.
Yeah.
And so then people suddenly started like changing their mind and were like, oh, maybe I am down with this thing, because it's not just like this idea that I'm voting against, and I'm voting against these actual humans. And then they started doing really similar stuff with like abortions, like people going around and being like, no, I had one. These are the contexts around it. And that's why it really made sense for me. And it wouldn't have made sense for me to have a baby at the time. Yeah. And people were able to change their mind. Because they were humanized into actual human beings, like at your door with names and faces and a kid on their hip or not. And like,
well, and I think that goes into like the storytelling aspect, right? Like us being able to share our story is like the thing that allows people to have context. Because before that, you're just an idea. You're just a black person. You're just what, insert whatever, you know what I mean? And until they like, I don't know, I was reading that thing about the black dude who like unracisted all those Klan members. I think that's the word. I'm pretty sure it's an active verb. That's what you do. And so he unracisted all those white folks and, you know, got like their robes and stuff. But it was like they were able to hate somebody who they didn't know because they didn't know them. And once they knew them, it was harder to make that association of like, these are the things I built up about you. But now that I'm sitting here, you know, it's just like, it's just such a different situation.
And how terrifying is it for like that person to put themselves in like an unsafe relationship with all these people? And should it have been his responsibility to do that and put himself at risk? Absolutely not.
No. Yeah.
That is like a terrible thing to expect any like marginalized person to do.
Yeah.
And also like, I don't know what else we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is tough.
Yeah. And it's tough. And I will admit that like I have even recently and have been a person that is quick to react to seeing something and then making a quick decision and not thinking in the moment. and trying to reflect on those things is hard too. And it's hard to admit like, hey, maybe I acted rationally. Or acted rationally too quick.
Yeah. Well, and I think it goes back to the self-preservation thing of just like, we've had to sit silently and be harmed and not address it for so long that like, when you feel like you are harmed, it makes sense to be like, okay, I don't want to feel like I did before. So I think the opposite of what I was doing is the better reaction. Mm-hmm. And I think with most things it's coming into the middle. It's saying that like, yes, this is worth bringing up, but like, maybe I need to figure out the words for it. Cause it's like, yeah, I don't agree with every racist. And I'm not going to say that like they can, you know, that they're entitled to fucking be cruel and harmful.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like I need to understand, like I've grown up in so many small white towns that like I know that there are people who aren't racist that have racist ideas, not understanding they're racist.
Yeah.
Once you've brought that to their attention, that's a different story. Right now, you know better. Now you should be doing better. But I think it's just complicated.
How do y'all deal with like this circumstance, too, of like, I have family members and I have like childhood friends who voted for Trump and like and it seems like the overall agreement of like functioning in a family dynamic and those kind of things is like we don't talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
And then at what, like, how do y'all handle this kind of idea of like, hey, we can coexist, but we're not going to talk about these issues, you know, the issues or whatever.
I struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I think I'm lucky that like my family is all pretty much on board with me, you know, but I think, I don't know. I think it really depends on like what they're saying. Like if they're saying something that is like, which often it does, like goes against, you know, obviously like just voting for Trump, there's a lot of different reasons why people are doing it that I think cloud other things that he's going to do. So I think that maybe, but yeah, I think just like, I don't know.
The not talk about it part is always difficult for me, you know, because it's just like, I understand, like, there's this friend that I have who he's Mormon. One of my best friends was very against, like, queer folk, and my mom was a lesbian. So it was like this very, like, just confusing, like, you hate them, but you like me. But, like, I would say ultimately it just ended up being like us laying there, you know, night after night, just bullshitting and just being like, I don't know, I think this and this is why I think it. And he's like, I don't know, I think this and this is why I think it. And it was me being able to get to a place of understanding that, like, if I was given all your similar experiences, there's a likelihood I could have ended up in the same spot, you know.
I had an idea. One of my strategies is to avoid them until they hopefully change their minds, because I love them and I don't want to hate them. Right. I've done that with a couple of people where I'm like, I know that you believe some stuff that I'm, because I saw some of your posts. Yeah. And so I'm just going to, like, comment on the pictures of your daughter and, like, tell you that I love you and I'm happy that you're doing what you need to do. And I don't really want to see you. And I'm hoping in a few years you'll figure it out.
Somebody else will fix you.
Yeah. And you'll pull your head out of your ass. Mm-hmm. Well, they're also not, like, there's someone, for whatever reason, they also drifted a little bit. So it just happened naturally. Yeah. If someone's shoving it in my face, I will be like, no, I can't get this. But I like the idea of being like, I have faith that maybe you'll figure this out. Like, depending on what it is, obviously. Or I'll just avoid you until you become nicer.
Well, that's what I did with my uncle. And it ended up being him passing away. You know, it was just like he growing up, he would say, like, these racist that, like, he would. Yeah, no, it's a fucking mental health podcast. We'll go and do it. He would call my white cousin the N-word and call me cracker. Mm. So that was a weird identity thing.
Like mixed messages.
Real mixed messages. Was that like a. OK, never mind. It wasn't a pun. I'm so sorry.
Kind of. I know your jokes.
Pew, pew. But yeah, no, it was just in that sense of, like, I thought that I had more time, you know? I thought that, like, if he would eventually come around to it. And the problem was is that he ended up getting sepsis, and, like, not even from drinking, but, like, his mind was just gone. So, like, he couldn't even make the attachments of, like, what he had done. Right. He couldn't remember all this time, like, the years, me growing up. He couldn't make any of those associations. And it kind of had to be me saying, like, OK, like, who am I holding on to this for? Mm-hmm. Right. Like, am I holding on to this? Because the hardest part was that he struggled with anger and I have bipolar, which is something I understand now. But in the fucking time, I was just like, this guy's just an angry asshole. This guy's a fucking dickhead. He's just doing it to be mean. And it's like, now that I have that that context, the humanization of, like, oh, I push people away with my anger. Yeah. Like, maybe he felt like that. So,
yeah.
What about you? How do you?
It's really hard, right? Yeah. Like,
I know my answers weren't that.
it's like, do you draw a line somewhere? Like, are you going to work with people who are actively choosing to cause harm? I don't, you know, like. I know for a lot of folks, it really is like, I draw the line at, like, this person voted for this person that goes against, you know, my values. I will not talk with them, like, get out of my life kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like, it is like hard for me to reconcile with the fact of, like, I have family members who voted for a president who, like, campaigned on, like, we're going to end gender.
It feels personal.
You know? It feels very personal.
It feels,
right?
Like, you voted for that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah. And so,
against your ability to, like, live your life.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And so, like, you voted for somebody who would, like, who campaigned on and, like, would, like, say, like, hey, we're going to take away your identity and who you are and those kind of things. And, like, so therefore, do you not believe that I'm trans? Like, where's, like, well, this is a huge discussion. Oh, huge can of worms, right? And it's often hard to do that, like, work to educate on that too. And so, you know, I don't know. I think I personally don't know if I have an answer right now.
I think
I'm in the right headspace to even do this right now.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that that's a really, that goes back to, once again, the self-preservation thing of just, like, if you have space for it, then, like, then I don't know. Something that, like, I'm trying to do is just say, like, trying not to do is just say, like, well, the answers are out there. You go find them. Because I feel like oftentimes we do that and it's just like, well, you kind of had to search for the answers. And, like, you getting corrected kind of happened on an individual level of somebody being like, don't say that or don't do that. So I think the idea that, like, we almost, like, somebody taught us, but we pass off the, like, well, fucking go learn it, dickhead. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, it doesn't allow, you know, and if somebody told you, says, fuck you, go learn it, you think you're going to go learn, you know? So, yeah, it's complicated. And I think ultimately, like, the thing that's going to help us make it through these next 4 years of seeing each other as human and seeing everybody as suffering and trying not to suffer. So, yeah. All right. Well, Allie, thank you so much for joining us. I really enjoyed having you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Jasmine, thank you for stepping in for Taylor. Yep, I appreciate you. Zoe. God, always a treat. Such a goddamn treat. I appreciate you.
That has been the Smoke Break. Thanks for putting it together,
Zane. Of course, of course. Of course, absolutely.
Now you can close it.
Now I can close it. That has been the Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with all the people I just said. Zoe Schwartz. Jasmine.
Oh, God, that didn't
end. And Allie J. Ward. Okie doke. Bye.
Okay. Okay, but I did that, and then I felt really weird about it.